We've all heard the phrase, misery loves company. It means, in part, don't be miserable. But it also means misery attracts misery. As difficult as it seems to be to choose what and how you feel, the reverse of that statement is, gratitude loves company. What you put out in the world in the form of energy, you get back. Yeah, that's kind of woo, but so is this episode. We're going into mindset, baby. The Eating Liberty Podcast, episode 211. Hello, folks. Welcome to the Eating Liberty Podcast, food and freedom once a week for life. Dr. Vic is my guest today. Dr. Vic is a former certified pediatric chiropractor who has become a spiritual slash business mindset author and podcaster. I invited Vic on to discuss mindset and how we can shape or change our reality by deciding what we choose to focus on. Part of our wellness is a response to our diet. We get into that a little bit, but really this is about how we choose to see the things in life affect how we see those things in life. It sounds odd, but listen to the show. It'll make sense. Hello, Vic. Thank you for joining me today on Eating Liberty Podcast.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm excited to have you here, too. I was watching a couple of your guest appearances on some other shows, and man, the rabbit holes. But before we get into all of that, and the listeners are going, what? Give us a little bit of a bio about you, and then we're going to kind of dive in here.
Yeah, I've been a certified pediatric chiropractor for the last 11 years. In the beginning of my journey, I was also doing energy medicine, energy healing. My background, I've been in nutrition for 22 years. So I'm like a holistic coach in that. I've been doing holistic coaching this year, started doing biohacker for the last 13 years. So that's been a lot of fun. But the other thing I do too is I started to get into, about a little over 3 years ago, business and spiritual mindset coaching. I'm very big into the mind. I'm very big into, with my energy background and mindset, neuroscience and quantum physics. It's just fun to put that all together and kind of give a layout to somewhat of a fabric to understanding a little bit of life a little more. And so I started doing coaching in that element starting this year. So that's just a little bit about me and what I do, and take it from there.
Okay. I think it's interesting, the whole idea that kids need a chiropractor, and that's, we could go down that road, but I don't want to go down that road. I really want to focus on mindset. And there's a superficial level of mindset, which is fine. And I think a lot of, I'm going to guess this. I have no way to validate this. I'm going to guess that most people, if they acknowledge that mindset has a, power is the wrong word, but I'm going to use it, a power to impact and affect outcomes in the physical world, they may sort of tee-hee, giggle, smile, and say, yeah, sure, whatever. But there's also an undercurrent, there's a woo factor in play with mindset where, and people might even experience that and say, wow, that was kind of weird. Okay, well, let's go back to what we were doing. So we're going to start with the superficial. I want to go for the woo. I want to go deep here. So I'm going to start this off with kind of a little bit of a story that I think most people can sort of at least recognize, that when I was in the kitchen, baking was, I invented a hierarchy of gods. The bread god was as Zeus. And the reason for that is the attention required to make the bread come out as it wanted to be. That's a weird idea. The bread wants to be a particular thing, and if you don't treat it right, you have not allowed it to reach its full manifestation. It's already getting woo. The bread god ruled everything, and you, the baker or the cook doing the baking, if you didn't attend to the wants and needs of the bread to make the bread as it wanted to be, then the bread god is going to be, oh, you did bad there, cook. And somewhere in the kitchen that day, something's going to work out badly for you. You're going to grab a hot pan, you're going to get cut, you're going to burn the food. Everything was tailored toward appeasing the bread god. Mindset, to me, seems to be, at least if we can torture an already tortured analogy, kind of like the god of the body. Health and wellness, to some great degree, depends on mindset. Does that sound right?
And mindset plays a role in everything. I mean, what's the placebo effect? You know, or the nocebo effect. How about the opposite of it? You know, for those who may not know, nocebo is thinking something's negative and it's going to end up being that way, or something that you've been told will end up that way. And placebo is obviously the positive. That's just one element of how mindset plays a role in our life. But there's so much to it, and I can go superficial. We'll stay superficial, right? So, you know, when you look at mindset and look at what is it and what's it all about and how does it play a role in our life, well, it's like glasses. You know, you wear a pair of glasses, let's say they're blue. All you're going to see in life is blue. You can't see red, can't see orange, can't see green, can't see any other color. It's just blue. That's all you're going to see. And that's your life until you change your glasses. Same thing if you had red glasses. I was on a podcast one time and the guest said this to me and I thought this was great. I never knew this. Polarized glasses, the ones that, you know, the lenses go darker when you hit sunlight. I never knew this about this, but you don't see reflections or glares off, like, you know, glass or, you know, if a window or anything, they, or off water, they don't show. And I was like, that is fascinating. I go, that's a beautiful analogy for mindset, because when you think of, when you look at and understand mindset, it, wherever your direction, where your mindset is, that's, this lines with the law of focus, is all of a sudden that's going to be, that's all you're going to see. And you can't see anything else. You're going to miss things. So like some people come and go, we'll go a little deeper now. Some people talk a lot about like, oh, scarcity mindset versus abundant mindset, or growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. You know, if you have a scarcity mindset, you'll never see abundance. You'll miss it. Now, is abundance right in front of you? Absolutely it is. But the problem is you miss it because you are, your mindset is stuck in a scarcity type mindset. And the same thing's opposite. If you had an abundant mindset, you don't see scarcity. Scarcity is never around you. Now, is scarcity around you? Absolutely it is. But the thing is, what lens are you wearing? And that's what allows you to see.
Okay. That works.
I didn't go woo-woo like there. I kept it a little, no, I went a little bit superficial.
Well, let's start just kind of diving in here. So one of the things that you talk about, and one of the things that I have come to discover is the case, and so one of the reasons you're here is to talk about this particular thing, because it's the gut biome. Food, eating, not eating, called fasting, and the vast unexplored expanse of the stomach. Yes, I twisted words there on purpose. There is very plainly shown by people who look for these things a gut-brain connection. So is there, it seems like there should be, is there a, let me rephrase the question, is mindset impacted at least two ways? One, by this is the almost self-defining, and so it sounds weird. Is mindset defined a little bit by what we have in our mind, but also is it defined or impacted by what we have in our gut? So if we're eating Twinkies and Pop-Tarts and chocolate Yoo-Hoos, Will our mindset be a particular way? Will we have a hard time getting to abundance, if that's what we want, versus, say, someone who's eating steak, maybe some salad, maybe some good carbs? Is that person going to have an easier time getting to, I don't want to make a judgment about that person's mindset. So if we say it's a healthy mindset, I don't like that word. What's a healthy diet? Well, it depends on the person. There isn't any one size fits all. So I'm tripping myself up with these terms that don't really mean anything. But for that person, can that person on a better diet, get to a more wholesome mindset? That's the same word, but it's just a longer word.
Absolutely. I mean, it will play a role on it in some way, shape, or form. I mean, we know that, you know, when you look at, let's look at it from a health perspective, right? Or even a neurological perspective. Sometimes they look at brain conditions and they say, well, is it the brain or is it somewhere else? We know 100% for sure that Parkinson's actually happens, like Parkinson's, a neurodegenerative disease. We know 100% for sure it doesn't start in the brain. It's in the gut. We know that 100% for sure now. Now, you're never going to hear this in the medical world, because they're going to go, it's a brain issue, because that's just how they're trained. That's what they're conditioned to be, right? But at the same token, can your gut play a role on depression and anxiety and things like that? Absolutely. That's one of the things I used to work with kids. If they had ADHD or kids were just having a ton of anxiety and OCD stuff and all this stuff, we work on chiropractic, and then all of a sudden I'd be like, hey, we gotta work on the gut, because there are things in the gut that can stimulate and override, overstimulate the brain in some way, shape, or form. So imagine if you have a gut. Now I'm going to come back to mindset, and I'm going to pull neurology with this. Imagine if you have a gut that is not healthy, right? You were talking about Twinkies and all that stuff and processed foods and whatnot. And your gut is what we call dysbiosis, which means it is very imbalanced. There's a lot of bad bacteria in there and viruses and all this other stuff, because your microbiome is not just bacteria. And then you don't have as much as good there. Well, the things that the off gas and what they create and so forth can also stimulate your nervous system to be in a fight or flight response, or freeze. That's another term for that. And that's your defense mechanism. That's your defense physiology. That's also going back into reptilian brain. So if it's firing up this fight or flight or freeze part of your nervous system, known as the sympathetic nervous system, that's going to create a lot of guardedness, and it's going to be very hard for you to access other parts of your brain that are higher consciousness levels to see things from shifting a perspective to having open mind more, X, Y, Z. And it can play a huge role in that compared to somebody who eats healthier. And again, the term healthy is defined by the individual themselves, but let's say food that we can use a different term, foods that are microbiome friendly. Right, that are microbiome supporting, we can go that route, then those individuals are going to have an easier time. They're not going to be as tense. There's not going to have this anxiousness kicking in. And I can go down all the things that can come with that. They're going to feel better. And when you feel better, you think, can you be in a better mindset? Can you think a little more positive? Can you all of a sudden, be able to have a situation and see it in different aspects? Absolutely. And so this is where the microbiome is absolutely amazing, and the things that it can do on a mindset and then just the mind itself are huge. And it's just we're only in the beginning of what we're uncovering, because this has been going on for the last probably 15, 20 years. I think it was early 90s actually when they started going, wait a minute, there's something to this. And now what's going on is just absolutely it's unreal, and how it's going to totally transform a lot of things. At least on the holistic side, because I don't know if medical is going to get on board yet until they can prescribe something or something along those lines to do that. But I know holistically, it's a huge thing.
The cynic in me says that big medicine will never do that because they can't find a pill for it. There is a lot more growing, and it's not boutique doctors. That's not the word I want. It's a growing thing. Atlas MD, I think, is one of the ones that it's just, they don't take any insurance. They have, it's like a concierge kind of a service, like a subscription service. And that seems to be growing. And I think that's the kind of place that's going to, where you'll find I guess. I haven't been to one. Well, you'll find they're called alternative, and so that comes with its own pejorative baggage. But it's funny that the alternative medicine was perfectly common 110 years ago, but now it's weird fringe stuff. But that's another show. Now, I have a 16-year-old daughter, almost 16. She'll be thrilled I said that. She claims to be a vegetarian, but doesn't really want to eat a lot of vegetables. And so she's a part-time vegetarian. She likes burgers fine. Maybe she'll have chicken fingers. So she'll eat some protein, but mostly she's pretty deprived of protein and loves her sugar. So she's her dad's kid. As a kid growing up in downtown Detroit, like pretty much every other kid in the 60s and 70s, we ate buckets of Sugar Bomb cereal. Well, she likes donuts and Pop-Tarts and all the things that now I prefer she didn't eat. But there's also a youth factor. So I know part of the diet thing, and working on that, it's Sisyphean if ever there was a task. But there's also time on the planet, and I don't think it's a reasonable expectation that a 16-year-old is going to, just by eating a gut biome-friendly diet, necessarily have the tools to access higher levels of consciousness, have tools to focus inside her brain ways to alter perception, this is getting woo, and change her reality, because there's a couple of big problems. One, she's 16, doesn't have that experience. There's a lot of the hormones swimming around that bloodstream are probably crazy. And then there's the uncontrollable peer pressure of school. So those things I can't do very much about. I can't change the hormones swimming around her body. I can't do much about the people who are impacting her and God knows what baggage they're bringing. But for the people who aren't 16, or maybe who are there exercises? The people say, this is a really interesting idea. I want to know how can I, so I'm going to use a phrase here that's kind of a trigger for people who know. Jane Roberts wrote a Seth series, and we're not going to go there, but discovering your sense of nature, how to change your belief. You have exercises people can start to learn to do to get into their brain.
Yeah, there's a whole plethora of stuff you can do. One of the things I used to recommend to a lot of my patients, just because the kind of work I did in how I evaluated things with certain technology, was how can we help them be more coherent? And coherence is basically heart, mind, body connection, and making, looking at what part of their nervous system is, more dominant. How do we balance that? And I would use a lot of chiropractic. That usually chiropractic 80% of the time will take care of everything. But there was times where chiropractic helped, but their lifestyle was overriding things. So we needed to make some adjustments. And so breathwork is one of the most powerful tools I like to share. I'm a bigger fan of meditation, but the problem with meditation is that people, in today's culture, in today's society, it's just getting harder and harder to do. And I work with clients, and when they want to get into meditation, I tell them, expect 90 days of frustration. And they're just like, what do you mean? I'm like, you're going to be frustrated for about 90 days. You don't expect to have a good meditation until after 90 days. And they just look at me like, are you serious? And I'm like, yeah. I mean, it takes 84 days for the brain to adapt to new habits now. That's on the average. And I'm like, our attention span has gone down to 8 seconds, which is less than a goldfish. These are all things that are not helping in the meditation realm. But what can we do is breath work. Breath work is just taking 10 deep breaths. Research shows that will slow down the nervous system. You can do a Wim Hof style breath, a Soma breath. You can do a holotropic breath. You can Google these things. You can go on YouTube and find all this stuff. There's conscious breath. There's the breath of fire. There's cobra breath, square breathing. There's so many of them coming out. But at the same token, why does this work and why is this so critical for especially like teenagers? I even try to get kids. I used to teach moms to use this on their kids, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds. They get upset. Hold on, just take a deep breath, honey. And it's funny how you can just see the child's behavioral change right there. And the reason why this works is because there's a part of your brain, it's literally right behind your throat, part of your midbrain called the breath pacemaker. That's what they call this. It's a cluster of neurons, and they detect the breathing rate of what you have, what's going on. And this is important because when you can control your breath and take deep breaths, which is going to increase more oxygen to your blood, but also stretches certain neurons and nerves in your stomach to promote relaxation, you slow your breathing down, that will alter your nervous system. And again, why is it important to balance? Because neurology is everything. If we don't ever have a conversation on neurology, we're missing the boat. And so when you can get your nervous system to be more in a balanced state, now this opens doors to potential having higher levels of consciousness. You can start to see things in different realms. And this is one of the most simplest tools that people can do. You can be angry, mad, upset. You can do some breath work. It'll change things. Here's another quick tip I usually like to give a lot of people and share advice is that, well, if you don't want to do breath work, and you may do breath work and you feel like it's not working, keep doing it until it does. But a whole nother way you can do something is go take a cold shower or jump in cold water. That's going to change your psychology very quickly. I promise you. Yeah.
Even thinking about it, it's like, well, I don't want to do that.
Right? The whole resistance to cold water. And I practice this every day. And it's one of those things where even sometimes I'll get in moods or I'm stuck in a mindset or it's just emotion and I just can't break through. And it's rare for me that happened, but when it does, and I mean, I practice cold plunging anyhow every day, but I'll be like, let me just go plunge again. And I'll plunge, I'll get out of there. I'm like, yep, I'm good now. It doesn't have the edge on me anymore. And then I can refocus my thoughts and get back to being centered and clear what I want to do. So there are tools out there. And like I said, there's so many more out there I can mention, but these are the two big ones that can be like quick ones. They're not like something that's going to take forever. You know, breath work, you can feel more calm. You'll feel more relaxed. Wim Hof has gained a lot of popularity, in the last, you know, few years. I've interviewed the inventor of Soma Breath. You know, again, different approach, but again, it's all breath work. That's why I try to tell people, you don't have to. A lot of times we think, well, should I do Wim Hof? Should I do Soma? Should I do this? Just do whatever. I don't care. It all works.
Breathe.
Like just breathe. Like, so I tell people, like, so that's why I started out with the first one. Just take 10 deep breaths. Research shows it's 6 deep breaths, but I always like to go a little further just because some people are like, oh, you know, maybe they didn't go as deep on the first couple. Throw a couple extra in there just for the heck of it. But yeah, I would have clients like sometimes they'll get stuck in certain moods or certain things. And I'm like, let's just reset that nervous system. And the reason why that's critical is because you're going to go into old patterns. You're going to get into old habits, conditions that you've been used to doing. And what this does is just kind of recenters back and just says, I'm not going to let my subconscious take control. I'm going to try and center it and be conscious of where I'm at and what I want to see happen and so forth.
So taking deep breaths kind of reminds me of grandma's stop and count to 10. It's, I mean, grandma, maybe my mom too, but it was a stop what you're doing, focus on something else. And that was just to count to 10 real slowly and see if the anger went away. Now, for most kids, it probably didn't go away, but it seemed to have an effect. But I think there seems to be some parallel here, and I don't want to dwell too much on that, but it's an interesting observation that if we keep going back to the grandparents and getting some solid, sound advice.
Yeah, that works well too, because that's one of the things is it's going to get your attention off what you were doing or what you were focusing on or what was aggravating you. And you just go back to here, and that's more of like a shift the focus to this part. And then hopefully if you do that right, then your brain doesn't go back to wanting to focus on that other thing that was there in the first place. And it kind of helps you just check in and recheck where you are.
I want to get to that, but I want to go back a little bit. You mentioned overstimulated brain. And then you said slow down the nervous system. So there are times, I think, when having an almost overstimulated brain is probably to our usefulness. Driving in traffic, being hyper aware of what's going on in busy rush hour traffic on an interstate, I'll take the overstimulated brain, please. Thank you very much. But there are times when trying to go to sleep, when everything from the day is just this cluster of just voices and noise and sounds and people like, oh my gosh, just shut up and go away. I know people who have to, who've listened to audiobooks for years just to have something that drowns out the internal monologue of all the stuff that they can't quiet down. So they say it works. Who am I to say it doesn't work? But how, dumb question. I'm going to ask it anyway. How does a brain become overstimulated in a negative way?
So what you were discussing is different brain states and the brain waves. So like, for example, if you're driving or if you're in work mode, that's a beta brainwave that's firing, where alpha is like a focus centered part. Theta is your meditated state in essence. And then that's also when you're starting to slow down, you get to the delta, which is those deep sleeps and so forth, when we go to sleep. So that's those states of mind. Overstimulating it is when you're firing up the part of your nervous system. Again, like I said earlier, was like that fight or flight. When you got overstimulation, the body's stressed. So you have tension going on and so forth. You don't have to have tension if you're in traffic. You could. You could be, driving around in the city. Everything's, you got to be mindful of all these things. But you can also, you can't have an overstimulated mind that way, but you can also just be in an alpha state, which is focused and centered. These are when people get into a work mode, but in the zone. And you can be all of a sudden, like, it's like a different consciousness. You're just sitting there and you're aware of what's around you. And then all that, you're not like getting, your eyes are not going all over the place trying to pinpoint stuff. This is more of just being more like in a flow state. So a lot of people talk about this in when they're how to be hyper focused when they're doing work and be mindful in the present moment of it. And that's when you shift your brain to get to an alpha state in some way, shape, or form to do just that. But yeah, overstimulating is going to fire up stress responses within the body. So you may not feel it, but your body's firing up stress responses. And that's what I mean by overstimulating.
Okay. So slowing down our nervous system sounds like it's going to at least have an impact in reducing the chemical response to stress.
Yeah, because when you instead of slowing down, we could just say balance the nervous system, but it's going to keep you more centered, reduce the chemical firing of stressors and firing up like simple things, just like increasing your heart rate, increasing respiratory rate. We're going to slow down the heart rate. We're going to slow down the respiratory rate. We're going to slow down sugar potentially be dumped into the bloodstream. We're going to slow down, we're going to increase digestion rather than slowing down digestion. We're going to increase, the immune function rather than slowing down or down-regulating is the other term, our immune system and so forth. So that's the kind of the concept behind it.
I mentioned at the top of the show, I listened to some of your guest appearances, and one of them was Todd Talks. Now, that got pretty deep, and that was a really good show. There's a lot to take away, but the one thing I thought was really interesting, and I'm paraphrasing something you guys talked about, was do less to do more. And I sort of get it, and sometimes it's worked, and sometimes like this doesn't make any sense. And it sounds like a contradiction. It sounds paradoxical. How can this possibly be the case? And so I sort of think about and this might not be right, but it works for me that the alpha state is Neo at the end of Matrix 1, where just everything's there, and he is the master of his domain, and as it happens, he's also the master of everybody else's, but... Now, I'm not sure how much fiction carries into the real world, but so slowing down, taking some breaths, counting to 10 to do more is, well, you're the one that said it, so well, sort of, so elaborate on that.
Yeah, so it's really you're doing less to whatever more, right? Do less to make more, do less to have this more. We've all heard the quote in our life, work smarter, not harder. Right? But no one ever taught us, what does that really mean? What does that look like? How does that process work? And because what happened in our life and most people's lives is we've all been conditioned to do. We've been all conditioned to look outside ourselves, give our power away and all these other things. And power can be, we can go many, there's many ways I can break that down. But when you look at you know, the being element, you have to understand there's Newtonian physics in this world, and there's also quantum physics. You could choose the quantum physics. You know, people go, well, what's Newtonian physics? Well, Newtonian physics is doing, you know, I have to work in order to produce a result. I have to work hard to do this. This is in the business world. They talk about this all day long. Grind, grind, hustle, put the sweat equity in. You got to sacrifice in order to get to become successful. And that sacrifice is your health, time, money, and family to get to the levels you need to get to and all this other stuff. I'm not saying none of that doesn't work. I've never said that and on record, and I never will. But when you use force energy or Newtonian physics, there has to be, you're giving up something to get something. In the quantum world, you don't have to do that. The quantum world is just the invisible world that basically dictates our physical world. And you can, and when you understand quantum, you have to change the words around a little bit. Nikola Tesla said this in 1900, that if we look at the universe in the state of frequency, vibration, and energy, we will vastly change our world, what we do in 1 year compared to the last 50 or something along those lines. I may be, I'm paraphrasing that. It's probably 1 in 10 or whatever that may be. So don't quote me on the years. But if we, you have to look at life then from an aspect of vibration, energy, and a frequency. One thing we know for sure from a scientific standpoint, everything's energy. Now, what's energy? Because some people go, well, I don't, when you say energy, I don't know what that means. Is it caffeine energy? Is it this? You got to understand that everything in the entire universe is always moving, and it's all made up of energy. And this energy, if we go back to chemistry and you look at the old, if you can remember the atom where you have the nucleus, and in there, there's the proton and the neutron.
The old Niels Bohr diagram.
Yeah, right? And well, when we go, you go deeper into that, there's an energy force that creates that allows that to happen. And quantum physics has come around and said, wow, there's even smaller molecules, and you got the Planck's and boson and quarks and all that fun jazz. And these are things you can't see, but yet we know that they exist. And it's one of these elements that explain this on a deeper level. But when you go into that level and go deeper, it's just energy. It's just energy of space. And so when we look at life from that perspective, then you start to understand, and this is where universal laws start to come in. This is, you know, things as like, well, what's the law of vibration? The law of vibration states that anything that you're vibrating at is the only experience you can have. You know, there's quotes people use a lot that say, life doesn't happen to you. It happens, you know, it doesn't even happen through you. It happens as you are. And so whatever you're, you know, from a vibratory standpoint, let's use a little bit of an experiment to tie this all together. If you took two tuning forks, and I just held these two tuning forks in my hand, if I strike one tuning fork and I just hold the other one, and I never, and it's just been staying there the whole time, never been touched, never anything, that one tuning fork that's vibrating will eventually, the other tuning fork will vibrate at the same frequency as the other one. This is known as the law of association. People will talk about this in the elements of like, oh, you average the five closest people to you, and that's who you are. If you average the average five incomes, everyone, five closest people to you at the average of their income, that's who they, that's what you're making, kind of one of those kind of things. But it's all vibration at the end of the day. And so when we look back, the vibration is going to determine where, what we experience. And so now let's take it back to the whole work less, make more, work less, do this, you know, or experience this, whatever that is. It's work less, have a bigger dream life, or experience your dream life more. It's understanding this principle that everything's a vibration. And once we can work on playing in this game of the quantum world and utilizing and understanding how do we raise our vibration and try to get it to match that. Now, this is where it becomes hard for people to understand, because we think of like, okay, what's that level? How do I get there? What number is that at? And there isn't any. We cannot put from a conceptual standpoint, you know, put that and say, well, this number at this level at this point is that. We can't do that. It's just like I was watching a video on YouTube, Netflix, and they were talking about infinity. And I was like, oh, this must be a good documentary, which I didn't enjoy it. But
that doesn't mean it wasn't good.
I'm not saying it wasn't good. Just in my opinion, I didn't enjoy it because I was expecting something a lot deeper, and it wasn't. Right. It did not go to the level at all that I thought it was going to go. But hey, but one of the things they did say is that at the end, they're like, well, we can't really conceptualize infinity, you know? And I was just like, no kidding, because infinity is just constantly expanding. But we understand it exists, but we just don't. We from mind to try to put it into perspective, say, well, this is infinity. But then the whole concept, because what happens when you add one in? Well, it's not one plus infinity. It's infinity. It always will be infinity. It doesn't change. It just expands more. But I understood from a spiritual, because my spiritual background and my, you know, looking at ancient wisdoms and stuff and learning all these things, I could, from a spiritual context, look and go, well, I can explain what infinity is and how it works. But from a physicist standpoint, from a mathematician standpoint, they're going to sit there and go, well, yeah, that we that doesn't make sense because our algorithms can't, you know, get to a certain point. We can try to get close as we can, but then we hit a stuck point. And that's the same thing with energy and stuff like that. It's the same thing with electricity. We understand how to utilize electricity, but we don't know how the aspects of like how electricity works in a certain way, but we know how to utilize it. And this is the same thing with understanding energy and vibration. Is it's one of those things where I don't know if we'll ever be able to really conceptually get to that essence of it, but you know, but at the same token, we can learn how to utilize it. And that's one thing I teach and one thing I've learned over my life practicing and doing to do those kind of things.
I just had an idea. And I think I know the answer, but I'm gonna ask you because I want to see if it goes a particular direction. So can we say that our energy is kind of like a mass, matter, where it exists, can't be altered, can be used, and can be, see, this is altered. That's a weird thing. Because we can change our frequency. Now, this is a good, so let me ask you, if we change our frequency, I'm going to decide that I'm going to have a better day than I've been having. So I change my frequency. Is it fundamentally the same frequency, or is it still me? Is my frequency me? This is man, holy moly, if I dug myself in a hole here. Is each of us resonating at a particular frequency that has, who say, does it change pitch? How do we talk about a frequency that alters either higher or lower? Is it the same one with a different pitch, or is it a whole new, is it key of A and key of G?
It's kind of like when you look at music, this is the way I like to explain it, because it's when you look at music, there's different tones, there's just some levels, ones that are higher and some that are lower, right? And they all create a different sound to them. Well, the same thing is this. We know that emotions are, there's different vibrational or consciousness levels to emotions. We know that thoughts are electrical and they have a vibration to them also. And so here's how you raise your tune. You raise your vibration. You think of something that is more of a higher tone or higher positive, you know, note to that. You tie in your emotions that are high, and all of a sudden you're raising your vibration. Now let's put this in a practical way so you can understand, because some people hear this and they're like, this is way out there. Well, it's real simple. Have you ever been in a great, when you're in a great mood, how do you feel? You're happy. You feel lighter. You feel good for the day. All the things are just great. Even if something bad happens, it doesn't affect you as much because you've been in a good mood. That's a high frequency. Well, have you ever been in a low frequency where lower vibrations, where all of a sudden you just constantly are seeing, let's say you're constantly seeing the negatives of things. You're getting irritated easily. You get frustrated easily. We've all been there. That's just the range of frequencies and what you get to choose every single day. Now, there is a consciousness level that we all vibrate at, and some research shows that we're kind of stuck there. We don't change too much throughout life, but we can choose to raise our vibration as much as we can by just what I was just sharing there, and then that's going to create a whole different outcome. Your vibration will literally change matter too, because that's what quantum physics is proving with consciousness. And how we alter our reality in just by, you know, we can talk mindset all day, but when we got to pull in the energy level to this, because then it's, you know, how you see the world is what you create. You know, how you see something is what it's going to be. I mean, this is spiritual truths that have been around for eons. In the Bible, it talks about, you know, the power of vision, you know, in talking about looking at Proverbs 19:18 says the people without a vision will perish, that you have to have a vision. You have to be able to see within what you want to create for yourself in your life. And there's so much that can tie to this, but quantum physics has shown that. In one of their studies, they've shown that how we see something is what it actually ends up being. And we're just, quantum physics is literally unraveling how consciousness can alter and change the physical world, or matter for that matter, no pun intended. Because when you really think about it, the difference between lead and gold is just the vibration. That's all it is. But if you talk to someone who's a chemist or a physicist or anything like that, they're going, that's not true. It's the molecular structure and blah, 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 blah. And this is over here and that's over there. And I'll be like, yes, I get that. But it's the vibrational frequency underneath that, the subatomical particles that is allowing for that vibration to let the molecular structure, the molecules themselves, align in the way they do that gives us the presentation of gold versus lead. This is where everyone can look up the term alchemist. You know, they were able to change things, right? And those can do that in some way. And we are alchemists in our own way. I don't mean you can take gold, lead, and turn it into gold. I would love to see that. I know we're coming to that point. It's happening. It's going to happen. I know I'm getting a little deep maybe, but we can be an alchemist with our life, and we can change the frequency and energy of whatever it is that shows up in our life. And we can turn it into what we want it to be.
Years ago, Richard Bach wrote several books. He became famous for Jonathan Livingston Seagull, which actually he was friends with Jan Roberts, very inside baseball. But he wrote a little book that probably nobody really paid attention to called Illusions. And I actually found it a fascinating book. And I recognize part of it is parable, but one of the things that was the idea was really sort of fascinating was this quantum world of matter isn't as solid as you think it is. If you get down to what you were talking about into the center of the nucleus, there's, even though there's all this stuff there and it looks really, really tiny, in between the little bitty tiny is chasms of space. Now, chasms is relative to the size of the thing around it. So it's weird to think that you can be at the dinner table and take your apparently solid human hand and pass it right through the apparently solid, probably wood dining room table. And that's fine because the amount of space that's there is bigger than the physical thing that's there. Now, if you try it, it's not going to work. You're going to do one of those, just like I did at my table right here. It's going to get stuck because you expect that to happen. Whole other show. But getting into and recognizing this quantum world does really change how, it's funny because it all comes back together. It does really change how you literally see the world, also figuratively see the world. I wanted to ask, I think maybe this, even if it's not quite on, and maybe all of us have a different note, but I'm going to say that my general frequency is middle C. And on those really good days when I jump over the puddle and everything's going my way, I'm up there in the E's and D's, and maybe even a whole other octave higher, and just gliding through. And nothing's sticking to me, man. And then I wake up and it's cloudy and it's kind of rainy. And I didn't want it cloudy and rainy today. I wanted a beautiful sunny day. I wanted to go outside and replant strawberries. And now I can't do that. Now my expectations are down. So now my frequency is going down into the bass chords. I don't feel very good. And does that sort of at least make sense? Keeping that musical scale there. So the middle C part's still there, but now I'm adding low notes or high notes, and maybe sometimes both at the same time, to what is probably a really complex frequencies, because there's different sounds going on at the same time. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things, a book I highly recommend, I've talked about this in all my books, is a book by Dr. David Hawkins called Power Versus Force. It was a book that transformed my life because I was learning vibrations at the time and frequency and all this stuff, and I got it referred by a friend and I read it. And he doesn't call it that, he calls it consciousness levels. But in almost 30 years of his research, he mapped out everything from religions to music, like different types of music, to emotions, to all aspects of life. And he's tested everything. He's tested what Jesus vibrated at, Buddha, Krishna, these are the avatars. And then he did all this other stuff to map out where their consciousness levels were. And, you know, it was fascinating because in my training in energy healing, I was told that the body, the nervous system can only handle so much energy, spirit, source, energy, life, consciousness, whatever you want to call that. And if it got any higher, if it goes after a certain point, the body can't contain it. And I was just like, interesting. So I learned that. And then I read his book and he says the exact same thing. And I was like, this is so cool. But he did it from a very scientific process to evaluate this. But that's where when I said that most people vibrate at a certain frequency or consciousness level in his terms, and most of us don't break out of it. We stay within a certain small parameter of a range. I think he said it's like 5 consciousness points is what it is. So he has a range of 0 to 1,000. 1,000 is the max level of consciousness levels that can be expressed, you know, that a human being can have. And there's only been 3 of them in the entire world that has ever existed. And I mentioned them already, Jesus, Buddha, and Krishna. But he'll go through and, you know, talk about, you know, the different levels when you're at this level versus this level and so much more. But yeah, highly recommend the book. It dives deeper into those kind of things. But yes, we can elevate at certain frequencies, go higher and lower, but there's going to be a certain frequency that we always come back to that's going to be our norm that we kind of like vibrate at. Unless we do the work, and thankfully in this time and age where we are from a humanity standpoint and evolutionary standpoint, I think this is where humans can actually kind of break that rule a little bit. And because you got to remember, science, I'm a very big into science, but the same token, science is, you know, when you're looking at science or looking at a study, it's just looking at the most common or average. Doesn't mean it's an absolute. And so, like he said, his research has showed that most people stay at this certain frequency. Yeah, that's probably the average. But I think in humanity's growth and where we're going to now, I think we're going to be able to break out of that. Even more people will be able to do it compared to what his research has shown.
I think what you said is if my base frequency, where I always come back, is middle C, I can change that to D or E if I want. Now, the part that's missing there is the part that's going to make everybody say, never mind, I'm not doing that, which is an exceptional amount of effort, not labor, but the Seth, I know the readers can't see, the readers, the listeners can't see, it's called the Seth book, it's Jane Roberts. And so she takes some 300 pages or something like that to talk about how to say you believe something to be true, but you don't like how that belief impacts the outcomes in your life. So you figure out, we find out what it is that takes effort. Then you figure out what you want to replace that belief with, something on the positive, because what you're seeing is the negative. Then you go into your brain, find it, take it out, rewrite it, and then continue. That still requires effort after that, but the amount of reading, the amount of physical in your head effort is a lot. And it requires something that was a big phrase, you know, be present to be present. What the hell does that mean? Well, it means you got to sort of pay attention to you. And sometimes, now this is really the big gamble with paying attention to you and looking at what is you. Sometimes you don't like what you find. And now what? So it's, and I get it. I mean, I've been through that. I've been like, wow, this is it's a lot of work. But it has a payoff. The payoff is you might like you more. And that's, you know, if you like you more, what's going to happen to everybody around you? Oh, man, this is amazing. But I get it. It starts with you, and that's not a decision I make for anybody, but that's effort. There's a copywriter I know who's been on the show who gets very, very woo-woo about a lot of things, and he's very much into mindfulness, and he talks about magic. M-A-C-I-C-K. I spelled it wrong. M-A-G-I-C-K. Magic with an extra letter, and it's not David Copperfield stuff. Fun to watch. Very entertaining. but it gets into, well, is that a term you've heard? Is it something you're familiar with, or is this too much woo for you?
Oh, no, this is not. I can go very deep into the woo. So, but yeah, no, this is, I don't know if I've seen, when you were spelling it out, I was like, I know I've seen the wording like that before, but I just can't reference to what or those kind of things.
Yeah, and it's not really, I know, so I know he is into it. I know he's done shows on, he's got several podcasts. He's talked a lot about it, about how you can use it. But like, the phrases, we've been so beat up by big ag and big government to believe things that aren't so. So we talk about proper nutrition as if it's some sort of witchcraft. Oh, look what I did there. So thinking about eating a sound diet that doesn't comport to the FDA's guidelines is almost blasphemous. Well, I had news for you. You really shouldn't. If they say it, do the opposite. You'll be better off for it. So thinking about ourselves is now everything is down to a pill. Big Pharma has a, Apple used to say it was an app for that. Big Pharma says there's a pill for that. Don't effort yourself. Come take our pills. They're free. Now that's another show too. I want to move into a different part of the show, but before we leave this kind of like, I want to, you mentioned a book. Yeah, I know you have a few books. We can get to that. For, this is, we've been all over the map here. Can you give a 2-minute synopsis of tomorrow morning? Listeners are going to wake up and say, you know what? I'm willing to try something in my house. I don't want to go to a gym. I don't want to lift weights. I want to do it in my house, in the comfort of my place where I don't have to worry about how others view me. What can they do to start moving their, at least to find their frequency? What is it? What is their base frequency? So they can recognize when it happens and then start paying attention to when it goes up and when it goes down, and how do they change that right then and there?
It's real simple. What do you pay attention to? What grabs your attention? That's usually because you're going to pay attention to the things that you, again, what you focus on and what you're vibrating at. You're going to see that. Because remember, like I said before, you can only experience in your life whatever you're vibrating at. So you can't experience love if you have hate. The love's there. You're just not going to see it because you're vibrating at hate and you're only going to experience that. So it's where, what grabs your attention the most? What pulls you, right? Like I used to have a fear of the world and how dangerous it is and diseases. Now in my life, I have a fear of nothing. The world's a beautiful place. Now somebody can come and say, how dare you say that? Look what's going on in the world. Look at this. I know it's there, but there's so much beauty. The beauty over it mutes all that noise. And it's one of those things where that's the easiest thing I can say is just where you're paying it. What catches your attention? That's going to be a sign to where you're vibrating at. Another thing you do is just see how you feel every day. You know, what the emotions are showing up. Because that's going to be another indicator. You know, there's a lot I can go into that, but I'll keep it, you know, just keeping it short. Just see how you feel every single day. If you're not excited for the day, that's a low vibe, you know, and that's the, if you're, you know, if you don't have, you know, sometimes people say, I wish I was younger because I had all this energy and I had this, the way I saw the world and viewed the world. You can have that now. It's not that, like, age doesn't do that. Right. It's just allowing things that you have within that's affecting you. But I'll leave it at that for now. There's a lot I can get into, but I just, you know, I think that's a good point to start. That's a good starting point for the listeners to start to create some awareness.
You didn't say a word that I thought, and I, what came through in, so two things. First, the recognizing what you have is grace. We didn't talk about grace. I think grace is a really, really important part of this conversation. It's going to have to wait for another episode, but I think grace is vital. And I've actually had a couple of guests on talking about grace. I think the other thing that really applies is, so let's say you have a dog and you didn't get up on time to let the dog outside and the dog potted on the floor. Well, yeah, it's an irritation, but I think how we decide to view the things, see, potty on the floor is potty on the floor. It's nothing. It's not judgmental. What you bring to it, oh, man, I'm 5 minutes behind work. Now I got to clean up. It's going to stink. It's going to make a stain. I got it on my finger, down my finger. Either it's a good thing or a bad thing, and how you decide to view the event is going to impact your frequency for the day. And so change your mind about how you view the things is a way to alter your frequency from low frequency to high frequency, and we'll get away from their judgments. We'll just, they are what they are. I think that's that be present time, that mindfulness, that you have to be active in the things. Now, I don't think all the time, and it's really hard to find the grace in a flat tire on the way to work. I admit, man, that's a challenge. That's a toughie, but not everything's going to be easy. No, finish. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, because you're bringing up some good points, and it's one of those things, again, too, like I said, focus, right? So if my dog, I didn't pay attention, and he ends up peeing on the floor, I'm going to feel bad, right? A lot of times, some people say, dog should know not to pee on the floor. You should know better. What's wrong with you? You're old enough now. I mean, my dog's almost 9. And for me, I'd be like, you poor thing, what I made you go through. I didn't pick up on your cues. I didn't pay attention. You probably were suffering. You didn't want to pee on the floor. This is your home. Why would you want to pee on the floor? And see, there's a level of compassion there. You get a flat tire. Somebody said, well, you can't get through. You can still get through it. What, universe, you're making me stop for a reason. I got to pay attention to why that is. I got to be present to find that gift. And I have a friend of mine who's very good at this, and he always shares his stories on Facebook. Like something happened, or something came up, and it stopped, interrupted his aspect of what he was trying to get done for the day. And he's like, you know what? There's universe is doing this for a reason. And all of a sudden, he'll strike a conversation with someone out of the blue, and something came where they gave him insight, or he was able to help, or something. There's always something, and I'm like, I love how he shares those stories, because it really is true. You shared it right on the dot. Perspective is everything. You know, when I work with clients, I'm all about reframing their mindset. Like, how do I can reframe? Remember I was saying we're all alchemists? Perspective is the alchemist. Because you can look at an event. An event's an event. That's it. Life has no meaning at all. Life is meaningless. It's only what you give meaning to that gives meaning to that. And perspective is the same thing. You can have an event and someone to look and go, oh my God, it's the worst thing ever in the world. Look what's going to do this, blah, blah, blah. And someone else is going to go, well, it's going to be a blessing. COVID was an example of that. Now, I got to be careful how I say things here. Because I remember when I was working with clients and COVID was coming, I was warning them ahead of time, a couple months in advance, what was going to happen. And they were like, oh my God, this is scary. I'm like, no, it's not going to be scary. This is going to be a great time to be in business right now. And they're like, what do you mean? Things are going to be shutting down, lockdowns. I said, This is going to be quantum leaps for you in your business and your life. And I said, it's going to be great for humanity overall. Now, people on the other side of the story will say, how dare you say something like that? You know how many people died? How many people this? How many people that? Trust me, I get it. I'm with you on that. You understand where I'm coming from. Uncertainty is a great generator for good things when we're there, because it gets humanity out of our comfort zone. That's what this did. We walked into a whole stage of uncertainty. And I'll tell you, people who stepped into that, they became, I mean, look at the billionaires. They increased their wealth by 56%. Now, some of it can be controlled, some be not. I won't get into that. But the point I'm trying to make is that there's a lot of growth in our lives that we could take advantage of when there is uncertainty. But again, it's all perspective. You know, even in my own business, when it hit, we took a 40% hit on that first month. But my perspective was I'm going to come out better in this process, because I'm going to educate my community. I'm going to empower my community as much as I can. And I'm just going to do the best that I can and what I can. And I know everything's going to work out. 3 months later, we're breaking records in our office. This is during COVID. You know, and I'm not saying that to brag. I'm not that type of guy or I'm not that individual. I share that to press upon like perspective, vibration, frequencies, all the things that we've been talking about. These are the kind of things, because there were chiropractors that did not have that experience. I knew some that had 80% loss. I had some that are still not, they still didn't rebound back properly. And it's one of those things where, again, is it because, oh, I was just lucky? Not maybe. Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't. But what I do know, based on what I understand in quantum physics and all these other things I've been studying for years, is that my mindset was this is going to be a great thing for us and help us grow, because it's going to position us in a certain way. And we can help educate more now on stress and what it does to the body. We can educate more and help moms and support them with their kids and all these other things that were, you know, that were coming down the pipeline. And some others may not have had that perspective or had that awareness or got caught into the fear. Right? Because what you, again, everything comes back to what you focus on. And if you focus on the fear, you're going to experience only more things in your life that's going to create more fear for you. And until you change your view and your focus, you're only going to continue to see, because your brain has to do that. You know, that's the thing. You're the creator of your life. When, you know, all these term and things that we heard, and sometimes it sounds woo-woo, but there's principles that align to this. I mean, when I say like, oh, what, you know, neuroscience, there's a part of your brain that eliminates all, it filters out all information that you don't deem valuable. All information that you don't deem valuable. So what does that mean? What that means is that the only thing you're consciously aware of is whatever you deem possible. Notice I didn't say what your brain deems possible. I said what you think is what you deem is valuable. Sorry. And so you can change your values, and then that starts to change that brain part of it. And when that starts to happen, then it opens up the door to other information that was already there in the first place. Everything exists. Like I said, I can look at the world and see the horribleness of it, or I can see the beautifulness of it. I've seen one side. Now I've been experiencing the other. But my brain, I've trained it to be at that point to where that's all I ever see. Anything can happen in my life and I'll still see it as a beautiful moment, regardless. And somebody said, well, what if somebody died or something? It's still a beautiful moment. It's not going to be fun in the moment. I'm human. I'm going to go through that experience. But at the same token, I know there's going to be beauty that comes out of that. There's going to be growth that's going to come out of that, because I've conditioned and see it in that way. And then my brain's conditioned now to be like, yep, let's see where that is in life, right? The Bible says you seek, you shall find. If you seek for the beauty, you're going to find it. If you seek for this, you're going to find that too.
Fascinating. I like that. It's a good end to that part. Let's take a moment out for a word from Jake about his Tasting Anarchy podcast.
Hey everyone, Jake here, host of the Tasting Anarchy podcast. Join my co-host Mason and I each week as we explore the world of wine and alcohol through a Liberty lens. You can find us on all your major podcatchers, tastinganarchy.com or Tasting Anarchy on Twitter. Tasting Anarchy, your wine and liberty podcast. Find out how much government is in your drink.
So what I have here, the other guests have called it the quickfire, so that's what I'm going to go going with. Of the five flavors, sweet, salty, sour, bitter, or umami, which one's your favorite?
Ah, that's a good one, you know, because umami's really good. That's the protein tasting one. I'm gonna go with that one.
Umami? Mm-hmm. What's your favorite food?
Steak.
Makes sense. What's your least favorite food?
Least bad food. No, let me see. I got to answer that in a different way. What do I not? Anything that has, no, because it's adding things. There's foods I don't like. I'm just going blank. Olives. Let's go with olives. I'll go with olives. I can't stand olives.
What sound do you love?
Nature, if I can say that. You want me to be more specific? I can, but nature, anything with nature just soothes me.
What sound do you hate?
You probably gotten this a lot. You know, nails on a chalkboard.
Oddly, not as much as you think. Traffic is one of the more popular ones.
Interesting.
What gets you excited?
Life.
What turns you off?
Suppression, anyone that suppresses someone or Yeah, suppress in some way, shape, or form.
If you could cook for anyone, anywhere in time, who would it be?
If I can cook for anyone, that means I have to be a good cook.
Not necessarily. Well,
how about enjoy a meal with, but I make the meal?
Yes.
Anyone in time? Nikola Tesla. Yep.
I like that answer. What's your favorite food indulgence?
There's a few of them. I'm just trying to think which one would I choose. I mean, Italian food I love, but I mean, it's carby, but I'll anything, you know, I'm Italian too, by the way. So it's one of those things where I'm like, I can eat all Italian food to a certain degree of it, but it's just so carby. So yeah, I'll go with that because I know when my mom visits me. Yeah. When my mom comes with me, comes and visits, you know, my parents come by. I mean, my mom's a great cook. I've been cooking since I was 6 years old. So it's one of those things where it's like, we just go to town and I'm like, okay, let's think of this recipe. Let's do this. Let's do that. And then I'm like, at the end, like 3-4 days after they left, I'm sitting there going, man, why is my body just feeling like sludge? And I just feel inflamed that I'm like, oh yeah, we've been cooking and we eat good food. I eat all organic and everything. And I try to get as, you know, the best as possible. But at the same token, I'm just like, yeah, that's it. But when she's around or when I can make a nice fresh focaccia or pizza, I'm going to dive in hard. It's a whole pizza for me. It's not just a couple slices.
Where are they from?
They're from where both my sides of my family are from, Naples.
Wow. Well, see, the coast is right there. There's plenty of fish. It's not all carbs. But you definitely got pizza right.
They're from a small town called Sarino, which is in the mountains. So they're a little bit away. But Amalfi Coast is only 25 minutes for them. So yeah, they can get some fish.
No place in Italy is more than 45 kilometers from the sea.
That's true.
So, all right. How can people follow you?
The easiest way is that my website's my hub. www.empoweryourreality.com. I have everything there. I got free resources on there. My podcast. If you're an entrepreneur and you're interested in some of the coaching stuff I do, I have that there. My social media is on the bottom left corner of the website. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and TikTok. You can find me there. And then also, if you're into health aspect stuff, I have a website called www.healthbydrvic.com. That's where I share all my health stuff, my health podcast there I just started, and the things I do for coaching on that end.
Okay. Well, very good. I'm going to say goodbye here, but if you can stick around for a little bit longer, I've got a part that I do for the Patreons.
Awesome. Cool.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me, brother. This was fun.
I'm glad you liked it. All right, folks, that's going to do it. I'll put Dr. Vic's website on the show notes page, which is culinarylibertarian.com/211. I'll also add a link to the book, Power versus Force, because that looks like an interesting read. You know, it was hotter than expected up here in the high desert for a week in October. It wasn't too hot to cook, but it was maybe too hot for more than one pan. Fix your too many pans problem with my cookbook, Cooking for Comfort, One Pot Meals You Can Make. I'll put a link to the blog page on the show notes page, or you can find the book on Amazon. Part 2 of the Hot Apps episode is coming soon. If I hit my mark with this episode, Vic and I went pretty woo. That was the plan. We have been put through a lot these last 2 years, and each of us can benefit from some tools to get back our balance. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. Music for the Eating Liberty podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.